You are watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. As you can see, I am currently in the comfort and luxuries of my home studio, largely because I was exposed to a COVID-positive guest that came to our studios last week. So currently observing the 14-day quarantine and doing work from home. This is, of course, the hallmark of 2020. A lot of us are working from home as well as studying from home, which brings about the most interesting of topics in our Yayasan Peneraju talk series, where we bring about quality of education for all, taking from brick to click. So joining me in this particular episode, we have two highly illustrious guests. One of them is, of course, the ever-famous Cikgu Samuel Azayah, the top 10 finalist of the Global Teacher Prize for this year, 2020, and of course, a teacher at SK Runchang Muazzam Shah Pahang. Welcome to the show, Cikgu Samuel.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a privilege and an honor for me to be here today.
Yes, thank you, Cikgu. Also joining us is Hawati Abdul Hamid, the Senior Research Associate at Khazanah Research Institute. Let's start with you, Samuel, because you have bonded with the Indigenous students at SK Runchang, and in fact, you have embraced their culture and you see the potential in them. However, they do not have the equal opportunities that we see compared to students that are in an urban setting or a suburban setting. How do you think the concept of click and mortar, or rather this blended education, can benefit students, particularly in your circumstances?
Well, first of all, I think the COVID-19 pandemic has made us realize that inequality and inequity in education has been happening for a long time, you know. And unfortunately, focusing on this pandemic alone, education has now become something that is a privilege for a certain group of people, instead of it being free for all. And this is what we need to avoid. So what I believe is that the pandemic has significantly widened this gap. And this gap, this digital gap, this digital divide between urban areas and non-urban areas have already existed before this, but it has significantly widened. So I think that the solutions for Indigenous communities, whether we are talking about digital learning or not, it's not something that is fixed. You know, each community, my community, for example, we have different needs of its own. Another community, maybe in Sabah, Sarawak, they have a very different need altogether. So I believe whatever solution and whatever intervention that is planned for these underprivileged communities must put context at the center of it. You know, it must be contextual. And how do we come up with interventions that are based on context? I believe we need to start defining the problem. We need to be designing focused interventions. We need to be pursuing active collaboration with the community that suits their specific needs. Theoretically, being as a teacher, personally, I think that learning online is actually something that is great, you know, because learning can happen anywhere. And it's in fact a dream for many teachers. You know, you don't really necessarily need to go to school. However, even if infrastructure in schools like mine have improved throughout the years, this includes, you know, gadgets, accessibility and connectivity, things have very much remained the same at their homes. That means, like, for my kids, you know, though we have computers at school right now, they don't have that similar infrastructure at home. So there is a lack of conducive environment at home. So I believe that this pandemic has caught us off guard, and nobody was really prepared for this. So I think this concept of, you know, blended learning from bricks to clicks, it's something that has to be contextual based on the context that we are focusing on.
So that's the thing about making something at scale. When you have to customize a delivery system, in this case education, I don't know whether it is feasible for everyone to do. And considering that Malaysia is at different starting points depending on where you are in the country, it's very hard for you to roll out a solution that is highly productive for the students. Which brings about the question that I want to ask Hawati right now, because based on your studies, it's very important for us to understand where we are at as a nation And of course, as when you hyper localize it to say, for instance, Runchang, Muazzam Shah, Pahang, then it becomes a little bit different from where I am recording right now in Damansara, and becomes a big problematic area for the country to roll out an irrigation process. So because of the advent of the click and mortar, Hawati, it has brought about changes into how we deliver our education system. My question to you is, what exactly are these changes and how do we roll it out to people like Cikgu Samuel out there who is at the frontier and delivering this kind of education system to the public?
Okay, thank you, Ibrahim. I suppose when we are talking about click and mortar, this term actually originated from brick and mortar, whereby essentially it is a face-to-face classroom learning, but with the advent of digital technology, the brick has become click, whereby we are acquiring knowledge via virtual medium, and in doing so, we need some devices that can assist the learning. But there are a lot of, as you said, there's so much that that teachers can do with, especially when they have to monitor specific learning capability and limitation of student in a big classroom, and this kind of technology, a personalized technology that can actually monitor student development, can be very helpful in terms of doing that and taking some of the burden that students or teachers are facing. And I believe that click and mortar is something that we should embrace. Of course, there are a lot of limitation, and there's a lot of the changes that we have seen, a lot of changes in terms of how learning are imparted between teachers to students, especially during this pandemic. And I see that this is a way of democratizing education. We've seen a lot of in recent period, people are more open in embracing Zoom meetings, Zoom education classroom, and this somehow have opened the access to a lot of contents of education, such as those that come from renowned lecturers or professors that we can only have the privilege if we travel to the location to gain the knowledge. So this is something that we should embrace. But of course, as Teacher Sam mentioned just now, it's really about the digital divide and the differences, the gap that we as a nation and our children are facing in terms of infrastructure.
Yeah, okay. That's the thing, right? The digital divide, which brings about what Samuel was talking about just now. It's very hard for us to go with one full type of delivery instead of the other. That blended learning has to be put in motion. Samuel, I want to ask back to your question. What is the future of classrooms going to look like for kids that are in urban areas versus suburban areas versus frontier areas? Do you feel that, 2020 has brought about that significant question of whether or not we are prepared to teach those that are not accessible towards digital solutions? What is the way forward for everyone to get quality education, Cikgu?
Right. For me, we need to give more autonomy to schools. I think that's one of the directions that the Ministry of Education is right now trying to go towards. Previously, a lot of our policies, a lot of our interventions have been very top-down, where it comes from the ministry, goes to the JPN, JPN goes to the PPD, PPD goes to the school, and schools basically, our function and our role in communities is basically to just carry things out. But I think the pandemic has taught us all that we need to come up with specific interventions. And I think for feasibility and for autonomy to happen in school, I think this is the best time for it to happen. Because as teachers, I feel, I'm convinced, in fact, that we know what's best for our students. We see them every day. I'm communicating with the community almost every other day. I'm there most of the time. So we know what we need to be done, we need to do in schools. And I think schools and teachers needs to be given more of that autonomy. To your question about how the future of classrooms or future of education is going to be like, I think when we speak about clicks to bricks and all that, in fundamentally, I believe we still cannot replace teachers in face-to-face interaction as of yet. I think this is even not happening in technologically savvy countries as well. Because as teachers, I think what we do is more than just the delivery of content. It's more than just delivering a syllabus, you know. We connect with our students. We create a relationship of trust with them. And for most students, they actually spend more time with the teachers at school and their friends at school rather than with their parents. So we have this relationship going on with them for years. And I think attempting to do this through a screen has been extremely challenging. But on top of that, I believe that, you know, e-learning or digital learning that has also brought forth different challenges that we have never seen before. Mental health issues, for example, you know, not just for the students, but as for the teachers as well. But on a very positive note, I think when it comes to digital learning, based on what our previous speaker said, we are actually getting much better at this. You know, I've seen teachers this past whole year that they have actually pushed themselves to innovate, you know, to overcome, to connect with people from abroad, to get lecturers from abroad, to do webinars after webinars. And I see that digital learning is going to be a big part of the future. But in the future, I think there is still going to be some blended thing happening, but, you know, it's going to be more digitalized.
No,
but
I understand.
I think the balance is very
blended
crucial.
Education, it has to involve teachers. Right. We are talking about children at K-12 education where they need adult guidance. There's a story here I want to share with you. I'm currently pursuing my chartered accountant studies, and I've been doing this for the past 12 years.
Right.
So 12 years, not graduating is problematic for me, because that innate interesting, you know, that internal motivation to get it completed is not there. You know, life happens, you know, I have my own kids, there's a job, my wife is doing her master's, there's always all this stuff in between. But, you know, because of this pandemic, I am doing this, with full dedication, and it brings about that very interesting feeling. I'm an adult, I can motivate myself, I can set myself my own schedule, and I can keep to it, but that's not necessarily something that my children can do.
And I agree with you, and I'm suffering with this as well. I'm currently doing my master's. I'm supposed to be in the United States, actually, and I'm doing this semester online, and I'm struggling, you know, to just stare at the screen for 3 hours every day, and it's not as easy as it is. And if you're putting it into the perspective of the children, and they're sitting in front of the screens with 7-8 subjects every week, that is tough, man. That's really, really a hard thing to do.
All right, we'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Tawati and Samuel. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I am with Hawati of Khazana and Samuel, the top 10 finalists of the Global Teacher Prize for this year. Hawati, let's focus a little bit more on the conversation on making quality education available for all. There's no denial that we were taken by surprise by the pandemic, and we are not ready. We are not equipped to face these kind of alternative solutions to provide education for all, let alone quality education for all. How are we in Malaysia addressing the needs of students in remote locations with little to no access of connectivity based on your research?
Okay, thanks, Ibrahim. That's true. This pandemic has actually disrupted 4.9 million students at school level, and at the university level, we have about 1.3 million students. And if you've been following Ministry of Education messages, they were claiming that aside from the first few days of lockdown, education have been going on as usual, but of course there are a lot of fine-tuning have to be done in terms of how lessons are being imparted, and a lot of the time teachers and students have moved to home-based learning. But of course the reality on the ground can be quite different from what students are enjoying when they are in the class, the real classroom. And I totally agree with Dr. Samuel, Teacher Sam.
Dr. Samuel.
Yes, doctor. School face-to-face learning can't really replace home-based or e-learning, because there are a lot of social social interaction have to be done, are taking place at school, and this is something part of learning process of students, that they develop social skills, interaction skill, friendship, and so on. I know that a lot is being done. The creativity of our teachers in trying to find ways that is most suitable for the student. But what I would like to highlight is, I wonder why there have been a bit of underutilization of TV as a platform to impart lesson, because I think, of course, we are struggling a lot with a lot of students who are not having devices, internet, and so on and so forth. But I thought penetration of TV are very high in Malaysia, about 98%. Yet we are not really utilizing this platform as a means to deliver a lesson or lecture to students. If we look at other countries like Thailand, they have about 17 channels to put in place a lot of content to each level of students. Turkey as well, they have a specific channel for each schooling type. Yet we in Malaysia, we only have 2 hours of air time for TV pendidikan, and I think this is an avenue that we can actually scale up, actually, especially to reach those children at the more remote area, because TV is more common compared to PC and as well as a tablet or smartphone. And another thing, of course, radio. Radio are able to reach about 20 million listeners, and there are certain kind of subject that can be used to radio as a channel to impart lessons, for example, like those subjects who don't require a lot of visualization, subject like history can be articulated using radio.
It's interesting that you're talking about TV and radio, you know, and we were talking about AI and robotics and all that, because yes. Sometimes people are so obsessed with the future. People tend to forget that, you know, these penetration devices, these devices have a very high rate of penetration. You're right, radio and TV, but we don't normally talk about it. In fact, in my entire year, let me tell you, Hawati, this is the first time somebody's talking about this, you know, bringing back old technology to get back to reach out to the children, which brings to mind the kind of things that are currently being done by the education system right now in the public, particularly frontier schools, like Samuel, where you are teaching right now. I want to ask you something very important, because all the stakeholders are important: government, teachers, students, and most importantly, parents as well, because all of them have to make it work in order for this to make it happen. Do you feel that there has to be some sort of mechanism where everybody can pitch in and join in? And particularly when you talk about, you know, more decentralized school method would be the way forward, the way you were mentioning just now. Do you feel that, you know, let's say schools are decentralized, let's say more parents are involved, let's say you get, you know, new technology involved and better connectivity, but at the same time you use TV and radio and all that. Is this the solution in case the pandemic is prolonged, in case, you know, assuming everybody got the vaccine already and, you know, things are back to normal, but is this, should this be the normal way of moving forward, Samuel?
Right, I agree with you. This should be the new norm that we are talking about, because I think what the pandemic has reminded us, I mean, this notion of education has always been there, but what the pandemic has reminded us is that education is not something linear. For a very long time, we've been looking at it as something that is being delivered from teachers and schools to students, and that's it. You know, I remember when I was really young, my parents were really involved in my lessons, you know, my homework and all that, but I don't see that happening right now. So I think redefining what education is, that it's not from the school alone, means that we need to start collaborating and networking with one another. not just multiple stakeholders, like you mentioned, but I think organizations as well, we love to work in silos. You know, schools love to come up with their own programs. NGOs love to come up with their own programs. At the end of the day, if we don't work together, the impact of what we are doing is not going to be significantly felt by the community and the children. And I also think that when we start planning together for interventions suited to the needs of the students or the community that we're catering to, we must be able to use available resources. It's not about always coming up with novel ideas. Let's look for ideas that work for the community. And as an educator myself, I personally feel what this pandemic has taught teachers is that we need to continually upskill ourselves. You know, I mean, if we just look at the year 2020 alone, everybody suddenly know how to create their own webinar, you know, or their own online session. So this is there is the need to continually improve ourselves. We need to be reflective. We need to try different strategies, because I believe we have been complacent, and complacency in this pandemic means that our students are going to fall behind.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes without saying, honestly. Reskilling and upskilling has been the theme, or should be the theme, for this year. But let's focus on 2021, which is just a few weeks away. Let's talk about the reality of things, particularly the reality of things on the ground. Let's start with you, Samuel. What would be some of the wish lists that you want? You've spoken a lot already, I know, but right. Some of the things that you feel that the country has to start thinking seriously about, and perhaps join you in the conversation of how to make it a reality, Samuel.
Well, first of all, I don't think they should. I think we all have a significant role to play, small but very significant role to play. But when we're talking about underprivileged communities, minority communities, I still believe that there is a lack of infrastructure. And you know, we heard about the girl, Viva Noah, who had to climb up a tree to actually get internet connection to complete her studies. And these issues, though not many, but they are still happening. So we need to address this quickly enough. If we are, you know, some people might say, you know, we just need to come up with like handoffs or one-off payments to communities to help them out. But I don't think it should be that way. If it was that easy, I think the government would have done it already, you know. But I think the coming up with the marginal analysis of making an informed decision could be time-consuming. But for 2021, I think the thing that we need to be focusing on is getting equal infrastructure for these communities. But I also think that it's a very tough question to answer. If I was a decision maker, you know, what would I do? What were the first things that I would do? It's just going to be very hard to answer, because every ministry, the Ministry of Finance, you know, every sector has been equally affected by this pandemic. So I think the government needs to really look through their resources, really needs to come up with the best plan. And I hope, I really, really hope, I know they're looking at this, but I really, really hope that they actually focus on underprivileged communities more than the rest, because I think they need it the most.
Samuel, because that has been the key theme for people like us trying to bring about that conversation of making everybody start from the same starting point,
right.
In a sense, making sure that everybody gets equal infrastructure access. Hawati, what about you? What would be some of the things that you are thinking about for 2021? Particularly when it comes to bringing quality education throughout the entire country.
Okay, in my view, government responses to pandemic, especially in the education space, it has been quite reactive in a sense, and adopting quite a wait and see approaches. I hope that in 2021 they can be more. Can be more upfront in terms of what they want to do, because as somehow while they are trying to say that learning are continuing as usual, but the reality is a lot of direct interaction between student and teachers are not happening because of limitation of our infrastructure and so on. And a lot of the time it's just teachers, they have to resort to just giving homework and while expecting student and parents to do all this lesson at home. I hope that Education Ministry will have a more strategic and robust strategy to actually roll out a better plan. First is in terms of strengthening the imparting lesson. Secondly is also in terms of strengthening our approach in facing this type of crisis way much in the future.
Right. Thanks, Hawati. Thank you again, Samuel, for joining us. That was Hawati Abdul Hamid, the Senior Research Associate at Khazanah Research Institute. And you just heard just now earlier, Cikgu Samuel Isaiah, the top 10 finalist of the Global Teacher Prize for 2020. And of course, a teacher at SK Runchang, Muat Zamsyah Pahang. Thank you for joining us for this episode. If you've missed any part of this episode, just head on to astroawan.com. Look for Notepad over there. You can view these kind of episodes on your devices. And of course, your mobile devices, download the AstroAwan app. But for now, thanks very much for watching and stay safe, everyone. And again, if you've missed any part of this, I urge you to look also for the Yayasan Peneraju Talk series. We've covered these and all the other topics similar to this extensively over the past few weeks. So it's perhaps it's a good time for us to recapitulate some of the ideas that we've talked about and perhaps bring forward a more cohesive strategy for next year. Till then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.